When I'm not hosting this podcast, I am writing books, but it is really hard for me to write when I'm at home, so I like to find remote cabins in the middle of nowhere to just hang out and write. But I hate the idea of my house just sitting empty, doing nothing but collecting dust and definitely not collecting checks. And that's why I'm an Airbnb host. It's one of my all-time favorite side hustles. Other popular side hustles are awesome too, don't get me wrong, but they often involve big startup costs. By hosting your space, you're monetizing what you already have access to. It doesn't get easier than that. And if you're new to the side hustle game and you're anxious about getting started, don't worry because you're not in this alone. Airbnb makes it super easy to host. I mean, if I could do it, you could do it. And your home might be worth a lot more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host. I'm Nicole Lappin, the only financial expert you don't need a dictionary to understand. It's time for some money rehab. Right around this time last year, I spoke to John Grauman, real estate agent slash star of Buying Beverly Hills on Netflix. We talked about the state of the housing market and opportunities for both buyers and sellers. Fast forward to the present, and it's time to check in and see how these opportunities have changed. So John is back to give us his outlook for 2024. John is my favorite of all the TV real estate agents because he's an expert on screen and off. But you should also totally watch him on season 2 of Buying Beverly Hills, which comes out on March 22nd. On Netflix. Today, we talk about how the interest rate drop could affect home prices, tips for finding your dream home, and for the cherry on top, the truth about squatters' rights. John Grauman.
Hi.
Welcome to Money Rehab again.
Yeah. Thanks for having me back.
You were here almost a year ago. Crazy town, USA.
Yeah.
What is time? When you were here last, inventory was in the pooper, interest rates were climbing, mortgages were high.
Yep.
But also prices were high.
Uh-huh.
So let's cut to present day. Fill us in. What has happened since last time you were here?
It might as well still just be a year ago. I don't know that much has really changed, frankly. We're still in a high interest rate environment. We're still in a low supply environment. And as a result, we have a stagnant market is the simple reality. We've been in this for the better part of the last 12 to 18 months. Obviously, the cost of debt is much higher. Thus, people's purchasing power got dramatically impacted. And, you know, usually when that happens, historically, there's meant to be sort of a teeter-totter effect. As interest rates go up and people's purchasing power goes down, thus too, so should home prices to reflect that. But that didn't happen this time.
The seesaw is broken.
Yeah, it really did. It broke, right? Because most sellers, most homeowners rather, still feel handcuffed to these historically low interest rates that they're probably never going to see again, right? So they don't want to give those up. And as a result, there's less supply on the market, less for the buyers to choose from. And I think that has inadvertently helped to stabilize home prices, right? Because if you think of real estate as a commodity, like anything else, what happens when there's less of any commodity? Its value goes up. Sure. In this case, it just held. It just stabilized.
I thought it was so interesting that you compared 2023 to 2008 and you said more homes were sold in 2008 than in 2023, which was
wild.
So striking to me. I didn't even think of it that way. Yeah. So what would you expect for 2024, I guess, compared to 2008?
So first, just touching on that point, because that stat is incredible.
Yeah.
But you think about it, in 2008, at least there were a number of sort of forced sales. There was foreclosures. There was things happening that at least continued to keep the market active. In 2023, it was just a stalemate, right? Sellers didn't want to sell. Buyers didn't want to buy. It was just a stalemate. And those that did, frankly, had oftentimes wildly unrealistic expectations. Buyers thought it was 2008. Sellers thought it was still 2021. It was just hard to get them to connect on like
meaning
what reality.
Sellers wanted super high prices. Buyers wanted
super great deals.
Bottom.
Yeah, exactly. So for 2024, if I can just, you know, whip out my crystal ball here and see what
Please.
It says, I think the market is going to get incrementally better. It started off so promising. We came out of this sort of holiday hibernation with this renewed sense of confidence and optimism because rates had started, you know, steadily coming down over Q4. And then the Fed came out with this surprising announcement right before the holidays saying that, you know, they're anticipating multiple rate cuts this year. Mm-hmm. And I think that's all the market was looking for. Everyone's just been waiting for a sign, right? It's like looking at that third base coach, just like, when are you waving me home?
Jay Powell,
right,
give us something.
Give me something. So everybody, I think we came out of the holidays and again, people seem to have a different outlook, that the sentiment was changing, the conversation was changing. And as you know, as the conversation goes, so does the market.
Yeah.
So we were feeling really optimistic like 6 to 8 weeks ago, and then it just kind of pulled back. And I think that's what the recovery is going to look like. It's going to be a little bit up and a little bit down, a little bit up and a little bit down. But overall, the trajectory is going to go upward. we need at least one rate cut. One rate cut will signal that the worst is behind us and we're on the ascent. But until we see that, there's still a lot of uncertainty in the market.
So two steps forward, one step back, but the overall like scatter plot chart is moving up, meaning what?
I think that we will have a pretty active spring selling season. I think that'll start to taper off a little bit in the summer. And once we're on the back half of summer and within like 2 months proximity of the election, watch out, because I think the market's going to turn toxic.
Why? So election years always muck up everything with financial markets. Yep. Housing market is not immune from that either.
Not at all.
So why so dicey, especially this year?
One word, uncertainty. All markets hate uncertainty. Capital markets, housing markets, and I don't want to derail this conversation by taking it too political, but Lord knows that this upcoming election is going to turn this country into a three-ring circus, and that is going to breed so much uncertainty into the markets. The natural human response is to say, I'm just going to pump the brakes. Things feel really shaky and unstable right now. I'm just going to wait for the dust to settle, see who's in office, and then I'll make a decision. And that you're going to start to see more and more of that as we get closer to November.
Yeah, you never regret a pause or a workout.
Is that on the bottom of the Snapple cap? I've never actually heard that one. Okay, all right.
It's true. When in doubt, sweat it out or wait it out, I think.
Okay.
And that's probably what's going to happen when it comes to the election, because regardless, some people might want to move to another country or whatever. Sure. And so that's not the time to make the biggest purchase of your life.
Probably not. But on the back side of that, once we get past the election, once the dust does settle, assuming we get a little love with interest rates, I think that the market's going to pick up pretty quickly. And I think that's going to be the start of the next boom. I think there are so many people sitting on the sidelines. Like, if you think about it, the demand for housing has not diminished. It hasn't waned. It's just getting pent up. The longer we're in this correction, the more it gets pent up. And the moment that there is a signal for people to start coming off the sidelines and getting back in, I think you're going to see a lot of competition, which inherently will drive prices back up. And that's going to be the start of the next bull run.
So hopefully a rate cut is going to happen. Do you think that the prices are going to meet somewhere in the middle, or you think that sellers are just going to continue to want astronomical figures? Like, if it heats up, there has to be some compromise, no? Or is it just going to be a seller's market?
It's more or less going to be a seller's market, is the reality. I think what you're getting at is this has been so unfair to buyers, right? Buyers got beat up and pushed around when the market was really frothy, right? When it was going at this sort of fast and furious pace, getting outbid on deal after deal and competing with cash offers and so forth. Then rates go up and it's like, okay, well, at least prices should come down. And they didn't, right? If you think about it from a buyer's perspective, interest rates went up essentially 2.5 times what they were just a couple years ago. And prices have held steady. There's been no adjustment to pricing. It's totally unfair to buyers. But all those buyers that have been sitting on the sidelines just waiting for prices to come down, they're not going to. It's not going to happen. It's a supply and demand issue. So yeah, the reality is, like, if you were thinking about buying, now is, relatively speaking, a good time to be doing that, because you can always refinance the interest rate, right? There's a stupid, cheesy saying in the real estate world, which is marry the house, date the rate. But if you think about it, it makes sense. Like, you can always refinance your interest rate. So if you can afford it today and you can
if they go down.
They will go down. If your expectation is I'll refinance when they go back down to 2.5% or 3%, that's wildly unrealistic. But they will go down. We'll see interest rates in the fives. There's no question about that. And that's normal. And that should hopefully give way to a more normal market.
Well, it's actually low, historically speaking.
Historically, yes. But I'm also of the mind that the days of doubled interest rates will never be seen again, because it's just a different world today.
Yeah, people have, not that long-term of a memory when it comes to interest rates, and are expecting the go-go days, of after the financial crisis that are never coming back.
No. As reality.
Someone who wants to buy a house too, I'm like,
yeah, it's a tough reality. I get it. It's a really tough reality for people that, again, have been sitting and watching, saying it's going to happen. Prices are going to come down. Okay, maybe. I just don't see it, barring any massive, geopolitical event, or heaven forbid, a catastrophic earthquake, something like that. I hate to keep saying these words. I'm not trying to put this out there. This is not me trying to like manifest that, but that's, it would take something like that.
For prices to come down a little bit.
For prices to come down. in my opinion. It's not going to be based on the current economic system that we're in right now. That's not going to sway it.
But are you mostly talking about big cities, LA, New York, where there's finite space?
Yeah, I think there's a supply and demand issue everywhere. In fact, I know there is. The reality is we're just not building enough houses to keep a pace with the growing population. And the millennials are putting a greater strain on the housing market than we've ever seen before. And they're all coming into their own now. They're getting married, they're having kids, they have jobs, they're getting established, and they need housing. So in a city like LA, where I live and work, I think that that's even more prevalent because we've just run out of real estate. We can't go any further west. There's a big ocean right there. We're not going any further east. We crossed downtown already. So a city like LA that's historically always been very horizontal is now starting to go vertical because we've run out of space. But speaking to your point earlier in terms
of... some of the houses over there too on the PCH are like falling into the ocean anyway. So
it's a whole nother threat, which is just, yeah, a climate threat, which is really, as it pertains to real estate, an insurance problem. And that is a big systemic problem that we're going to be facing in years to come that I'm not sure, frankly, how we're going to navigate. In parts of the country like LA, fire insurance has become so exorbitant, it makes it virtually impossible. I'm talking about premiums that are hundreds of thousands of dollars a year. Try buying, you know, an oceanfront property in Florida right now and getting wind insurance. It's virtually impossible.
Yeah.
Right. And insurance is required by banks to provide loans. Well, if you can't get the insurance, then you can't get the loan. Well, then the system breaks. So there's going to be some big challenges coming for this industry.
Isn't there the case where you can get insurance from the state up to a certain amount?
Yes, call a California Fair Plan up to $3 million. And then you can layer that with additional policies, but that's a whole nother thing. And I'm not an insurance broker.
But it's causing a lot of home buyers to get spooked or really priced out of the market.
And it's something most home buyers don't know until, I don't want to say until it's too late, but until they're already under contract.
Yeah, in the process.
We're in escrow and thinking I'm going to be moving into my new home in 30 days. And then you get an insurance premium that you think is going to be $20,000, but it's $120,000.
I think it's a really important thing to think about as you're going into the process and not when it's too late. I've talked to people who yep. are trying to buy in Mandeville or whatever around here. It's like impossible to get the insurance at all.
Yeah.
Even if you do have the money for a big, fancy, nice house.
Yeah. At a certain point, it's just, it doesn't matter how much money you have. It's just whether or not you're willing to pay it.
And explain to me why cash offers always win. Like at the end of the day, the seller will get their money from the cash buyer or from the bank. So they're getting the same amount of money.
Yeah.
But why is everybody so excited about the cash offer specifically if they ultimately get the same amount?
It's a smart question. So first of all, they don't always win. I've been in situations where I beat out cash offers just by having other terms that were better or more favorable. But if you think about what's the difference between a cash offer versus an offer that has financing, it really comes down to three things. There's no loan contingency, so you're paying cash. There's no appraisal contingency because you're not getting a loan. And you have the ability, the flexibility, I should say, to be more nimble and close faster. That's it. You take away two contingencies and you can close quicker. Otherwise, to your point, whether it's 100% paid in cash or 20% paid in cash and 80% in a loan, it all adds up to 100. That's all it is it just gives sellers a greater sense and feeling of certainty that this person will cross the finish line.
It's speed.
That's speed.
That's
yeah, that's it. And again, those contingencies are pretty significant because in California, the contracts are very much designed in favor of the buyer. So the buyer puts the property under contract and essentially just places a force field around the property for whatever that contingency period is, which is typically around 2.5 weeks. So within that time frame, they have an opportunity to look under the hood, kick the tires, do their due diligence. And it's all, you know, they have a free look to do so. If at any point they decide, I don't want to buy this house, they can pull the ripcord, they get their deposit back. And it's a real harm to the seller because they have to then try to recreate that initial momentum when they came to market and find a new buyer. But the buyer just gets their money back and can move on to something else.
Yeah.
So,
and then you have questions as a buyer too. Like I'll go on any real estate porn website of my choosing of the day. And I'll see like, oh, wait, this was off the market. Now it's back on the market. Like what happened?
It's
like,
tough.
I have
yeah.
some questions about yeah. it.
Look, it's the age old, you only get one chance to make a first impression. There is no substitute for that initial rollout. Hmm. When something is new to market, to your point, the real estate porn that everyone's looking at 18 times a day, when something new comes on and it's new and it's fresh and the market hasn't seen it before, that is every seller's greatest opportunity to get the highest price. The longer it sits, the more, I would say, negative the narrative is that people start coming up with in their minds.
Yeah.
True or not, doesn't matter. What's wrong with it? Why isn't it sold?
Yeah.
Why won't anyone pay that price?
Totally.
Right? People start...
Something must be weird.
Exactly. And this is an internal conversation.
Somebody die there.
I don't have the opportunity to then counter that. These are just things people are thinking in their minds, and it all then directly affects what they ultimately are willing to write in an offer.
Yeah, because it's all sentiment. It's all feelings anyway.
It's a very emotional process, the home buying and selling process.
But let's double click on those times where you beat out cash offers. How did you do that?
The one that comes to mind just off the top of my head was, it was a David and Goliath kind of situation. My client was David, competing against one of the wealthiest families in the world, had a cash offer, and I had them write a letter to the seller, and I knew the seller. I knew what would speak to them and what would essentially sort of pluck at their heartstrings. Aww. To know that, like, this is someone that you would want your home to pass on to. And they ended up leaving, the seller did about $300,000 on the table and going with the lower offer.
What?
Because they felt a connection to that person. And, you know, for them, that wasn't enough money to move the needle.
Wow.
Yeah.
I kind of just got chills a little bit. Is that weird?
No.
I have all sorts of feelings about financial markets. They just, that makes me a super nerd. Millennials, you touched on, infamously feel shut out of the real estate market, and they stress, they go on TikTok, they kvetch, they bitch, they moan that they
kvetch?
Don't have kvetch.
Kvetch. Yiddish?
Yiddish.
Kvetch. I like it. Okay.
That they don't have the same opportunities as the boomers.
Yeah.
Right? Is this narrative true? And if it is, what kind of resources do they have available to them as first-time homebuyers?
I would say it's definitely true. It's an unfair world. I hate to be so just direct, and I don't mean to sound insensitive, but like, it's not a fair world that we live in. And the world has changed dramatically. And as I said, there is just not enough supply for the growing demand. And as a result, yeah, a lot of people feel like, hey, I got shunned, I got shut out. That being said, there's also, you know, I think the biggest transference of wealth happening right now from the baby boomers to the millennials. And, you know, they will likely be coming into more money that will help them in that regard. But sure, people are also living longer. And right now, it's a challenging time for them, especially with where interest rates are.
But are there any things that they can use to lower the price if they're a first-time home buyer?
I wish that there was a magic pill here. There really isn't one. Again, the best thing you can do is to try to buy down the interest rate, but you're not buying it down from 7% to 4%.
You're talking about just with points.
Yeah, okay. More or less.
Can you explain how that works?
I mean, again, as I said, usually what'll happen is you can and structure this in the deal as to receive a credit from the seller to do that, so you're not coming out of pocket for it. But work with your bank and they'll explain to you what the trade-off is, that, hey, you pay 1 point and we can lower your interest rate, usually, let's say, a quarter of a point. So it would go from 7% to 6.75.
Which adds up over time.
For sure it does. And especially if you're going to keep that loan for the next 30 years, which, by the way, you're not, because lower interest rates are coming and people will have an opportunity to refinance, I think, sooner rather than later. But sure, in the short term, it's one way to at least kind of shoehorn in a little bit easier.
Okay, fine. What about up-and-coming neighborhoods? There are usually opportunities.
Sure. Yeah. If you can get ahead of that trend.
What do you keep in mind? What are your telltale signs that it's an up and coming neighborhood and not just like a faux up and coming neighborhood that's really going to take a while to.
Yeah, that's a good, interesting question. I would say proximity and relevancy are the first two things that come to mind, right? If it's a little town in Timbuktu, well, it's really not within proximity to anything, which really doesn't make it relevant. Like, is it just outside of a major city? Okay. That's interesting. Is there something about it, whether it's a vacation area for, like, you know, fishing and hiking and boating or what have you? I think COVID exposed a lot of areas that had been previously overlooked, right? COVID did a lot of things. And one of the things it did was it kind of brought the borders down and the world sort of became flat again in terms of real estate. And people started moving to Boise and started moving to Miami. And if there was any, you know, there was one great winner coming out of COVID, it was certainly Miami. But other markets, like just here in Southern California, Lake Arrowhead took off. The desert areas took off. Santa Barbara, Orange County, anywhere that was sort of a fringe area to a major city, again, proximity, took off because people realized, I can work from home now. I don't have to be within 30 minutes or 15 minutes of my office. I can be an hour and a half away, or I can be an hour and a half flight away. So those are the kind of things. And I just, like anything else, follow the money.
Yeah. I mean, the reason they're going to Miami or to Nashville or to Dallas or to wherever,
yeah,
they don't have income tax.
Right.
Follow that money trail.
Well, that and like, again, I mentioned Lake Arrowhead. So my wife and I bought a second home in Arrowhead during the pandemic. And, you know, a lot of clients had started moving out there. A lot of money had started moving out there. And as I said, you got to follow the money. And I had heard rumor that the owner of Soho House, Ron Burkle, had actually bought the Lake Arrowhead Resort, the big hotel there. And a friend of mine happens to represent him. So I called him. I said, hey, I'm thinking about making this offer. Can you call him and find out if this is true? And he called me back in 5 minutes, said, yeah, no, he bought it. And supposedly it's turning into Soho. That, again, creates so much new relevancy, which is going to create more interest and demand. And that'll drive more traffic there. And that'll bring values up.
Are you seeing a lot of your clients leaving for more tax advantage states?
For sure. Yeah.
How does California keep up with that?
Well, look, I'm not telling you or your viewers anything they don't already know, but you know, for California, the greatest thing that has going for it has always been and will still be the weather. You know, there is a weather tax we pay to live here, but people are starting to really question whether or not or how much that's worth. You know, LA, and I say this in all sincerity, I've lived here my entire life. I'm fifth generation from LA. I believe is in a state of crisis of sorts. The number one thing on most people's list when they think about where they want to live is safety. And obviously, we've had a real crime problem here as of late. And when people feel unsafe and when it's overly tax cumbersome, people start to question whether or not this is where they want to continue to live. And that's what we're seeing happen right now. Unfortunately, you know, it's like turning a ship to try to make any of these changes. But, you know, LA and California as a whole are going to have to if they want to continue to retain, you know, these wealthy residents that pay and pave the way for the state to be what it is.
I mean, you see these guys, Bezos and whatever, like moving to Florida, and in the amount that they're saving in taxes,
yeah,
the whole house basically is free. I mean, it's not free, but
yeah, and they're still here. Fancy. Bezos is here, right? A lot of these,
you have to track your days,
but you got to track your days, right? He'll spend, you know, 6 months and one day in Florida to be able to make that happen, but he'll be here the rest of the time or somewhere else. I mean, look, no offense to Florida, you don't really want to be there in the summertime. It's miserably hot. California still has one of the best, well, Southern California has one of the best climates in the world. And hard to put a price on that.
True story. You mentioned Palm Springs. I started my career in Palm Springs, fun fact. I was on the I team. I investigated all the shenanigans of Palm Springs. I was 19.
Interesting.
At the CBS station, KPSP, shout out. But I saw so much growth there specifically. And recently, we've heard a lot about short-term rentals contributing to the affordability crisis. Palm Springs has been in the center of all of the hullabaloo around that. Can you explain why short-term rentals affect the housing market so much?
It's hard to explain exactly what impact it has. First of all, in an area like Palm Springs, it's the residents that live there full time that hate the short-term rentals. And they hate them for, I'll just say, the sort of stereotypical renter that it brings in. Someone that's looking to go out to the desert and be loud and obnoxious and party for a weekend. And, you know, if you're living there full time, you moved out there for the peace and the quiet, the serenity. So that's, you know, that's the opposition that's been built up against it. The rental market has been soft as of the last 12 months. A lot of the lease listings we have been leasing for less in recent months than they did 2 years ago, which is, that's very much outside the norm. Usually, again, there's a trajectory upward. And I think that that's overall more a commentary just about the state of the economy and the psychology as it relates to the state of the economy, that there's just a tight grip on the purse strings right now. I think just a lot of people not wanting to spend money and sellers who don't want to give up, again, these historically low interest rates, but want to do something with these assets are then looking to try to short-term rental them.
Yeah, there are a lot of private equity companies that are also behind these deals. I think Palm Springs put a cap, right, on
I heard something about
vacation
that.
Vacation rentals.
Yeah.
I know. Look, Coachella's once a year. It's fine.
Hold on to your wallets. Money Rehab will be right back. Money Rehabbers, you have money hidden in your house. Yeah, just hiding there in plain sight. Okay, so I don't mean you have gold bars hidden somewhere in walls, treasure map style, but you do have a money-making opportunity that you're just leaving on the table if you're not hosting on Airbnb. It's one of my all-time favorite side hustles. By hosting your space, you are monetizing what you already own. It doesn't get easier than that. For me, hosting on Airbnb has always been a no-brainer. When I first signed up, I remember thinking to myself, self, you pay a lot of money for your house. It is time, that house returned the favor. And to get real with you for a sec, I felt so much guilt before treating myself on vacation because traveling can be so expensive. But since hosting on Airbnb, I feel zero stress for treating myself to a much needed vacation because having Airbnb guests stay at my house when I'm traveling helps offset the cost of my travel. So it's such a win-win. I mean, if I could do it, you could do it. And your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host. Do you ever get FOMO, fear of missing out? Well, do you ever get FOMO-tupita, fear of missing out on the perfect hire? If so, I have the antidote. It's LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn Jobs helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In any given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites, and that adds up to a serious squad of awesome candidates. LinkedIn has over a billion professionals on the platform, and these candidates are super qualified. So much so that 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within just 24 hours. I work with LinkedIn Jobs for all of my dreams. Dream Team needs, so they're hooking up money rehabbers at linkedin.com/MNN. Go there and you can post your job for free. That's linkedin.com/MNN, as in Money News Network, to post your job for free. Terms and conditions apply. And now for some more money rehab.
Last time you were here, we really focused on the home sellers. And now we're focused a little bit more on the home buyers because, as you say, they're on the sidelines or ready to pounce. With inflation, and we saw it up to 9%, can you talk to a first-time home buyer or somebody who's waiting on the sidelines jumping in to see how much inflation will eat into the value of their home?
Yeah. I mean, if we're looking at the forecast for what the housing market's going to do, let's talk about that for a second. In the projections, at least for this year, which again is going to be somewhat of a shaky year, is still single digit appreciation. And I think this is where people have gotten, a little bit lost in this, is that the deceleration of appreciation is not the same thing as depreciation.
Totally. Right? Or disinflation or
exactly.
Deflation.
Yes. Right. Okay. So prices haven't gone up as much as they have, but to even still be in the black, given everything we've been through for the last year and a half and where the interest rates currently sit, is remarkable, which again, all stems back to a supply and demand issue.
Soft landing for the win.
It played out very differently than people anticipated, right? Everyone thought, oh, there's a correction coming. It must come in the form of a huge drop in home values. And it didn't. It came in the form of a huge drop in the volume of homes, not the value of homes. I don't think people need to be terribly concerned about the appreciation of their homes keeping a pace with the inflation rate, because I think ultimately as rates come down and as more people enter the market, you're going to see prices go up and that's going to increase people's equity positions in their homes.
But oftentimes people forget about inflation when they're thinking about the growth of their home. Like when they say grandma bought a home for, you know, 50 grand and now it's 250 grand. That's amazing. But they forgot that when grandma bought that house, movie tickets were 5 cents.
Exactly. Yeah.
And an important thing to keep in mind.
100%. Yeah. And again, that's the reason why, as I said earlier, we're probably never going to see double-digit interest rates again, because it's one thing to have an 18% interest rate when the home you're purchasing is $75,000. But when that home is, you know, $3 million, it's unlikely we'll ever see those kinds of rates again, in my opinion.
And when you're thinking about the value of your home, how would you suggest for somebody to factor in inflation or how to think about the value of their home keeping pace with inflation?
Good question. I don't know that I really know how to answer that question, to be honest with you, in terms of there's so many things, obviously, that are going to be outside of each homeowner's control, right? So you're not going to be able to dictate what the inflation rate's going to be. That's a little bit bigger than any one of us. So it's more, I think, people get a little bit too fixated on this notion of the investment component. And not to take away from it, it is a huge component. It's the largest purchase and probably biggest asset in most people's lives. But it's also your home. Right? It's where you're going to spend time with your family and raise your kids and create your special memories. So don't lose sight of that. Historically, home values have always gone up, right? I'm not saying that we haven't seen dips in the market, but over a 7-year period of time, historically, over the last 100 years in the United States, home values have always gone up. That means that if you bought your house on the eve of the Great Depression, 7 years later, it was worth more than that, right? We're going to have correction cycles. those correction cycles are likely to be really faster and more extreme than we've seen in the past, because we live in a world that moves faster and more extreme than we've seen in the past. But I wouldn't be too concerned about it. Again, it's like I always talk to people in terms of looking at an investment property. It's like, look, if you're going to hold this long term, you're going to be fine. If you're going to come back to me in 18 months and ask whether or not you can sell it for a 20% profit, we may have a problem.
Yeah, it's such an important point to underscore that a home is a home, and leave some of the investment components to the professionals. If you want to flip houses, go on HGTV. This is more than just inflation adjusting the value of your home.
That's exactly right. Yeah. And you really look, if you're going to approach it from that perspective of trying to make money off this as a investment vehicle, you really got to know what you're doing. I've seen so many people try to wade into these waters that have no clue of what they're doing. And what was meant to be a 6-month project ended up taking 2.5 years. It was meant to be 100,000 at being 500,000. And you really have to know what you're doing. It's a profession like anything else.
There's been a story that I've been wanting to ask you about. It is the squatter issue that's happening in LA. You're fifth generation Los Angelino. What the heck? So there was a big LA Times article. They put out this wild story about two real estate agents. Did you see this? Who had squatters living in one of their properties. The squatters even created fake lease agreements, and they rented out a room in the house to a legit renter. They even set up the home's Wi-Fi.
So wild.
Bananas.
Yeah, it's wild. It's remarkable what people can do today. The, you know, fakes, the phonies, the deep fakes. It's just unbelievable. And it's really hard to guard against. I had a listing in West Hollywood last year that this family literally pulled up with their moving truck. They had a whole moving truck full of furniture that they moved into the house. And the owner showed up and was like, hi, hello, hi, who are you? What are you doing here? And had to call the police and get them out of there. But like, it's wild how brazen some people have been with this. So yeah, it's challenging. And I've certainly had my experience dealing with it. You know, as I understand it, and let me be super clear, I'm not an attorney. This is not my area of expertise, not my specialty by any means, thank God. But as I understand it, squatter's rights apply to someone that has been in a home for 5 years or more, that has established legitimate residency in that home, has paid utility bills, has paid the tax bill. So if you've just, you know, changed the locks and moved into a house over the weekend, according to California law, trespassing is different than squatter's rights. I know it seems utterly ridiculous, but they are they're defined differently within the confines of the California law.
So what kind of legal recourse does somebody have against
squatters? Well, if someone had been there for 5 years, then they have to go through a formal eviction process, just like they would if it was, you know, an ordinary tenant. But you'd have to be, you know, you'd have to be pretty obtuse to have someone squatting in your property for 5 years and not take note of it. Otherwise, you're just calling the police, you're calling the sheriff, and just having them kicked out.
But it feels like this has become more of an issue as of late.
LA is an interesting market because we get a lot of tourist traffic. We get a lot of fakes and phonies. A lot of the calls we get on our biggest listings, our bigger listings rather, we have to really scrub and vet, because I can't tell you how many fakes and phonies we've come across. And to your point, like people that have had fake proof of funds, fake bank statements, fake tax returns. I had one guy call on a property. It was about $100 million property in Bel Air. And he claimed he was the grandson of the King of Jordan.
I was just going to ask you, some prince probably has called you.
But that's not impossible. That's not entirely outside the realm of possibility in LA. We see that stuff. We have Saudi royals here. We have princes and, you know, the most affluent, wealthiest people in the world that live here. So that's not altogether, okay, fine, I'll go on this ride with you. And we went and saw the property. And I was like, this, you know, usually like it just doesn't pass the smell test. Something's wrong. And I said, why don't you come into my office tomorrow and we can sit down and talk more about this? Because he was talking about wanting to write an offer and so forth. And so I'm sitting there with my team and we're like trying to make heads, like, what's the over under on this guy being real? And I was saying, I'm telling you, this doesn't seem right. And then in the distance, I hear this engine you hear from blocks away. And I look outside and this brand new Lamborghini pulls up. And I went, oh, okay. The odds may have shifted a little bit. Until he got out of the driver's side, walked around, and handed the keys back to the guy from the dealership that came out of the passenger side and walked in and was like, this guy went to a Lamborghini dealership and drove up to my office just so he could pull up in it, hoping we wouldn't catch him giving the keys back.
Oh my God.
Wild.
Only in LA.
Only in LA.
But what did that guy, what was the scam?
That's the question. That's always the question. To what end? And then what? Because at a certain point, you have to produce the money.
Right.
I don't know. It happens all the time. I don't know if these guys are delusional, if they're trying to show off for their girlfriend. They have nothing better to do on a weekend. But we being just, I'll say, the real estate community is always asking that same question. For what purpose? To what end? Where do you see this going? You think that one day there's just going to be a transfer of title and we're going to give you the keys? Like, I don't know. But you have to be pretty damn crazy to even think to do that in the first place. So I guess I'll leave that there.
We end our episodes, as you know, with a tip listeners can take straight to the bank. We talked about so much. What kind of tip would you have for homebuyers today besides not pretending to be Jordanian royals?
Don't be short-sighted. Kind of what I was talking about before. Understand that this is a long game. And again, there is an investment component to this. Try to find the property that feels like home. And just know that the market will do its part. It will go up. It will go down. That's what markets do. They're cyclical. If anything, if the market of the last 18 months has taught us anything, it's that, oh yeah, markets are cyclical. We just forgot because we skipped a cycle and we were in a bull run for 10 plus years. But ultimately, find a home that is right for you, that's affordable to you, where you're not overextending yourself, and know that the market will do its part. Property values are going to continue to go up over time. You'll have opportunities to refinance. You'll have opportunities to pull out equity and leverage that to go buy other properties. But if I could go back and talk to myself 20 years ago, I would sit myself down and say, buy more real estate. Because if I would have bought more as this, you know, during this last 10 years, I mean, I'd be doing this virtually from a yacht.
That would be lovely.
Yeah.
Zoom works there.
Yeah.
I think it's really important to remember you can't control the macro economy.
Yeah.
You can only control your own micro economy.
That's it. Your own portfolio. You're not, like you said, the macro factors are way bigger than you and I. So focus on what works for you and how you fit within this sort of this infrastructure, if you will.
You didn't bring that crystal ball today?
It's broken. It's in the shop, actually. I've been going back to the tea leaves. Yeah.
Money Rehab is a production of Money News Network. I'm your host, Nicole Lappin. Money Rehab's executive producer is Morgan Lavoie. Our researcher is Emily Holmes. Do you need some money rehab? And let's be honest, we all do. So email us your money questions, moneyrehab@moneynewsnetwork.com, to potentially have your questions answered on the show or even have a one-on-one intervention with me. And follow us on Instagram @moneynews and TikTok @moneynewsnetwork for exclusive video content. And lastly, thank you. No, seriously, thank you. Thank you for listening and for investing in yourself, which is the most important investment you can make.